Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. And who are Paradigm Shifters? You might be one, as far as we know. Tonight's Paradigm Shifter is Dawn Goey, and Dawn has done an awful lot to help illuminate the problems of stress and also to tell us how we can take charge of our brain and give ourselves a lot more potential, a lot more human potential. And I'm very excited about how you got into this role, because I know you went through a personal transformation, Dawn. And if you can tell us how the brain works and how to improve its working and how to rewire it and like that. So this is Dawn Goey, our guest tonight. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Well, you know, problem with our brains, why they don't work for us, why they seem to kind of work against us, is because of stress. And it's a big problem. It's a big problem for a lot of people. 4 out of 10 of us have extreme stress. Another 4 out of 10 of us are 1 or 2 stressors away from falling in that hole. And it has a lot to do with the way our brain is wired. If we have chronic stress, it means our brain's wired for fear. There's a part of the primitive brain is called the amygdala. It's deep down in the old primitive brain. And it's in charge of fight or flight. And it has a rather limited range of interpreting what's going on. And, of course, its function is to determine a real and present danger. And when we were in the jungle, we probably needed about 150 times a day. But most of the stress...
But isn't the amygdala where we record that we're afraid of snakes, for example?
Yeah, emotional memory is a part of it. It's a complex system. It's actually the first system... in which evolution gave us intelligence, and that intelligence it gave us is fear, which is, of course, a limited intelligence. But what happens is that it can't tell the difference between a real and present danger and one we make up in our head, or one we think our way into.
And so those, you know, can be actually life-threatening, we feel, but they aren't necessarily really life-threatening, but we're all living in that kind of edge, isn't that
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And it's, you know, it's called psychological fear. Primal fear is what you will, the reaction that you'll have if you run across a rattlesnake.
Mm.
Psychological fear is when you mistake a stick for a snake. And we do that a lot. And we can generate all kinds of stress reactions, stress events, purely in our heads. And they excite wildly strong emotions. And they create this perception of threat when... A verifiable threat isn't always there. You know, it's what Mark Twain meant when he said, "My life has been a series of terrible calamities, some of which actually happened." And it's funny, the reason we laugh at it, because it's so true. Well, here's the problem with stress in our brain, is that the primitive brain cannot tell the difference between a real and present danger and one we make up in our heads, and it releases stress hormones, sets off a stress reaction in us. And those stress hormones debilitate higher brain function, and they keep us from fully expressing our innate potential for creative intelligence, for happiness, for positive emotion. And they interfere with the mind-to-body connection so that they shut down the immune system and other long-range systems. And over a long period of time, chronic stress leads to very serious illnesses. It's actually the number one cause of death in America. If you add up all of the illnesses, stress-related illnesses, it's the leading cause of death in America.
Well, and Dawn, don't we find, I mean, Americans are clinically depressed at a massive level. Is this not a response to a currents of stress running through our consciousness all the time?
Yeah, it certainly can be. Stress reactions, chronic stress reactions, stress hormones flooding through the system create an imbalance in our brain chemistry, serotonin imbalance, and we become depressed. It's a multitude of problems that it creates for us.
So how did you get into this? Are you a doctor? And I've got your book here, Mystic Cool, in my hand, and it's just a wonderful book all about this stress. And I want you to go back to, if you would, for everyone, telling how you tripped over this awareness or really brought this up in your life, and it began a process of really making
a difference. Well, I've been in healthcare my whole career. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I've been an executive, actually. I was at Stanford University Medical Center about 25 years ago, the lead executive in the Department of Medicine and later in the Department of Psychiatry. And I had a big wake-up there. In the core, I was at the top of my career at that point. I was working hard. It was an incredibly stressful job that I was in. But I thought, I was young and I was on my way. And then in the course of 1 week, the world came crashing down on me. I got fired from my job at the beginning of the week. And by the end of the week, I got diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Oh, my.
And I was married, with four children, a big mortgage to support that disability insurance wasn't about to cover. And I just hit the wall. I hit the dark night of the soul. I would wake up in the middle of the night prior to the 2 weeks before going into surgery and stare out into the dark, and I just didn't see any solution to what had just happened to me. I saw that my family and I were headed for the poorhouse, and there wasn't anything I could do about it. And then one day, my wife and I had an argument, said some unkind things to one another. The stress and strain of what we were going through was just widening the cracks that were already there in our marriage. And I went out on the patio, and I had a kind of awakening. I could see really clearly that this stress that I was under, which I thought was my external situation, I thought was the circumstances that had happened to me, I began to see that the bigger part of it had to do with how afraid I was. And as I stood out there on the deck, I got really scared. I got terrified. I think I went into a panic attack. And I came through it. I came through the other side. I rode out the fear. And I could see that stress was fear. I could see that it was connecting as the way I was looking at things, and my eyes were connected to a part of my brain that was throwing me in and out of fight or flight and making me ineffective on so many levels.
Was it Was it a lifetime of fear, would you say? Or
Later I came to realize is that, I had always been afraid from the time I was a kid. Mm. I was living through a lot of anxiety. And as I came through that one big experience of it, I began to really calm down. And I reached a point where I was actually at peace. And it was, at first,
because you had nothing left to be afraid of because it was all so much?
I think that's part of it,
How interesting.
I think that's part of it. And I think it was also the great relief of having survived a moment of real panic in which, I began to feel like I was going to disappear. And I had the cognition or the insight that if I could stay at peace, I'd be okay. Somehow I just realized that. And if I could, I could operate from a peaceful attitude, that I could find a way to navigate my way through these very difficult circumstances. And I wasn't planning to go back to the medical school and finish the job. They offered me a golden parachute, so there was no point in doing that. But then I wanted to go back. I wanted to kind of set things right, put things in order, leave with a good feeling. And when I went back, I was able to stay at peace. I was able to operate from this kind of dynamic state of calm and the usual stressors didn't get to me, and actually nothing was different.
Oh, so you actually returned to your job.
I did. Mm-hmm. I did, you know, this feeling, this inner peace that I was experiencing was very empowering.
So where did your tumor go? Did it sort of fade under
your... No, I had to go to surgery. Mm-hmm. But when I showed up for surgery, I was in a very good place internally, psychologically, spiritually. Mm-hmm. And the surgery made my surgeon famous. Everything went perfectly well. They had predicted that what would happen to me is that I would half of my face would be frozen. You know, I'd drool a lot. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to hear very well. I'd need a walker to navigate across the room. And none of those problems happened. Mm-hmm. And I actually even got my job back. I think what went well for me, you know, if you want to just talk about it in medical terms, what went well for me with the surgery was that this attitude shift that I'd gone through from fear to peace established that mind-body connection in which an optimal result becomes possible.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me back my job at the medical school, I think partly because they saw this amazing shift in this person. You know, I was positive. Even the
Did
person
you do your job
fired me
really
couldn't
well?
Believe me.
Even
you know?
What? Sorry.
No, but things just tended to work their way out, and it made an enormous impression on me that this psychological shift from fear to peace was a shift from no power to having enormous power, and I came to realize that the one thing we really do control in life is our attitude, is our state of mind. And when we get control of it, when we begin to exercise it in a powerful way, it can make the difference in situations where we seemingly have no control. And that made a big impression on me and changed my life.
And did your wife stay with you then, or?
We toughed it out for another year and then ended up splitting up, ended up divorcing. But it turned out to be the best. It turned up to be the best for both of us and for our family. And we, you know, we went on to raise our kids, you know, from separate corners, but did it in a good way, did it in a loving way with each other.
Hmm. Well, that's great. And so you took your job back, but you've gotten right into some tremendous, I mean, this book is so loaded with stress research, and you've got a lot of references of different kinds of researchers. So how did you move into, was this in through Stanford College? Or
well, at Stanford
Hospital.
Medical School, I certainly was exposed to a lot of great researchers and I really fell in love with science. I wasn't very good at it in high school, and I certainly stayed away from it in college. But when I got to Stanford, I fell in love with it. It's science is amazing. And after...
Especially
after,
when you're a walking laboratory.
Especially then, exactly. Especially when you need it. And but after about 3 years, after I'd recovered from the surgery and had worked at Stanford for 3 years, I just really felt a calling to go work with people who were facing some of the most stressful situations any of us face, and to begin to work with people and services that were really about this shift from fear to peace. And one of those places happened to be the Center for Attitudinal Healing that was started by Jerry Jampolsky.
Hmm.
And I went there and directed the center for about 12 years, and the center worked with the most stressful situations any human being faces, from people who are life-threatened, facing terminal illness, to parents who'd lost children, to we worked in San Quentin with lifers who are trying to recover dignity in their life. U.S. State Department sent us off to Croatia during the Bosnian War, and we worked with refugees there. And then, about 10 years ago, one of the people was a key in establishing Charles Schwab as that great corporation it became, challenged me. We became friends, and he was a donor of the center, and he challenged me to bring this approach that we had pioneered at the center to the workplace. He felt that the pain of stress was enormous in the workplace, and he certainly saw it within his own company, his own major corporation. And so that's when I began to really look seriously into the research on stress and the research on the brain. And about the year 2000, neuroscience had a major breakthrough. They discovered the place where our brain generates attitude. It's in the prefrontal cortex. And what they found is that the right side of the prefrontal cortex, when that part is active, we're generating a lot of negative emotion, we're generating a lot of stress, a lot of fear. If it's very predominant, we're probably in the hospital being treated for clinical depression or in jail for a violent crime. The left side of the prefrontal cortex, when it's active, what it indicates is a person whose life really works. This person's emotionally positive, emotionally resilient. They got higher brain function operating at a very high level. Their relationships work. You know, everything you think of as a good life, the left prefrontal cortex fits that profile.
So how did
and
you get the prefrontal cortex?
So what the science got interested in finding out, is it possible? So you know, as I was giving you those statistics, there's four of us that are you know, our emotional arrow is pointed towards stress. Another four of us that are borderline, only two of us really are tilted to the left, to the positive. So science wanted to know, can you take somebody who's tilting to the right, to the negative emotional side of things, and change their brain's direction, get the brain, coax the brain to move to the left, to the positive. And they did a lot of research around that, and I paid very close attention to it. And that's the research you're referring to that's in the book.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty exciting. Did you actually do research yourself, or were you a chronologue?
No, I'm not a researcher.
Okay.
I'm just a person who's worked out in the field for a long time, and I seem to have an aptitude for integrating this stuff pretty well. Yeah, my youth, I worked with Carl Rogers, the father of humanistic psychology, so I had a very strong foundation in psychology, and then working with Jerry John Polsky, you know, who founded a school of psychology based on attitude, deepened that foundation as well. So I've been working from that side of things, not as a researcher or as a clinician, but somebody working more or less in peer support and working with people, you know, facing pretty tough situations.
Have you worked with things like post-traumatic stress? And
yes, when we were in Croatia and Bosnia working with refugees, particularly refugee women. There was during that war, war crimes were committed that were absolutely brutal to people. And so people were having to deal with post-traumatic stress syndrome. And we were doing our best to help them with it. And the shift that I'm talking about that we can consciously make, in which we move from fear to peace, was helpful to those people. Was helpful in getting out of that endless loop of pain and suffer and emotional memory flashbacks that's a part of post-traumatic stress syndrome. So yes, I've been working in that sort of thing.
I'm just thinking, I mean, this book is amazing. I'd like you to get into talking about, there's a bunch of things I'd like you to talk about. One of them is how they did some research with the Dalai Lama and meditative people. And because a lot of us believed that the brain, you know, I was a teacher years ago and learned, like you did and like many did, that the brain established itself in its patterns by about 5 years old. And sometimes people would say even earlier. But this whole new neuroscience is talking about plasticity, isn't it?
Right.
So how do we change our brain? And talk about some of those experiments that were done in cahoots with the Dalai Lama and other meditating groups.
Well, you know, as I was saying, they found the place in our brain where we generate our attitude. Mm-hmm. And researchers wanted to know, is it possible for the brain to move our attitude to the positive when it's sort of stuck in the negative, stuck in a stress cycle? And so they just said, since the most positive indicator was a person that was at peace, a person who was emotionally resilient, the researchers decided that they needed to look at people who devoted their lives to practicing peace, and that meant monks. And so Richard Davidson, the University of Wisconsin, asked the Dalai Lama if he would send some of his monks so they could take a look at their brains with their high-tech instruments and see if inner peace had any effect on their on that part of the brain, on that prefrontal cortex, where our attitude, where our emotional state is created, where it will be determined for us whether or not we will be happy and have a rich and full life. And so the Dalai Lama agreed. He sent these people to him, and the neuroscientists tested their brain activity, and they were astounded at what they found. That this their practice, their inner peace practice, gave them the most extreme value to the left of anyone previously tested. In other words, they were generating a great deal of positive emotion. Emotional negativity didn't stand a chance in their brain, basically. They also found that inner peace significantly expanded the usual networks that you think of as higher-order brain function. These networks were larger. They were more fully integrated in the brains of these monks. You would see increased blood flow to the area. They had more gamma wave activity. Gamma wave activity indicates creative intelligence, peak performance. I mean, it indicates that cognitively a brain is working really, really well. There was greater activity in these monks in the center of the brain, a place called the caudate and the right insula, and that indicates a high level of interpersonal strength, the ability to really forge great relationships. When you see that level of activity in somebody, you're looking at somebody that would make a great parent or a great teacher or a great boss or a great spouse. It's somebody who makes a great human being, and they saw a lot of that activity in their heads. And I was just going to say, but just in general, it was just monks, their brains were generating a flow of intelligence that was emotionally peaceful and positive, mm-hmm. and made them immune to stress.
Hmm. And that does actually increase physical immunity too for all kinds of health, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because when you're chronically under stress, stress hormones are sending signals to your immune system, to your digestive system, to your reproductive system, to your growth system. To shut down so that the brain can commandeer that energy and use it for fight or flight. Because the primitive brain, basically when we're stressed, the primitive brain has picked up something's out there that we're afraid of, and we have to either fight or run from it. And so what it does is it goes into the body, and it takes as much energy out of the body as it can so that it can fuel either being aggressive or running like hell from something. And
it's not always a real threat.
What ends up happening is those systems begin to break down.
Yeah. That really makes sense, and we're learning a lot about immune despair these days in a lot of ways. Something in the book, and I can't find the page here as I'm flipping through, but something said that is it spies or somebody who had almost a matching brain to the monks that had been meditating?
There was one thing that they had tested the monks for, which it had to do with the Secret Service.
The Secret Service
tested out the highest of anybody for a startle reflex. So if you suddenly scared them, they had much less of a startle reflex. They didn't shut down as quickly. They were able to respond and deal with the situation. And it turned out that the monks actually exceeded the Secret Service in that capacity.
And now the Secret Service, did they have that amazing capacity because of that ability to train the brain so well?
Exactly. Okay. And the same can be said of the monks. They had the capacity. Inner peace was their practice. And, you know, you think of a monk, they're practicing at a very deep level of their spirituality, of their religion. And it becomes a practice, it becomes something they do every day. just like the Secret Service, you know, they're practicing their profession every day as well.
Well, I wonder how the monks would do if we threw them into a mall in a heyday of all kinds of shopping stress, like having to get their groceries and their, you know what I mean? It's like I'm just being a bit cheeky and going, well, what about if they were put in a kind of more mundane stress reality?
Well, you know, I know of a number of monks. I do workshops at their monastery out in Marin County, just north of San Francisco. It's called Green Gulch Zen Center. And they've been running a farm that provides vegetables for a restaurant in San Francisco that's highly regarded restaurant, really hard to get a reservation at that restaurant. They run a retreat center. They run a, and then they run the monastery. It's a major business. And these monks have been keeping it going for 75 years.
Wow.
And keeping any kind of business going involves a certain amount of stress and strain. They're not immune to the problems that any business has, and yet they move through them with this attitude of peace, with this dynamically peaceful way of dealing with whatever problem comes up. And eventually what ends up happening is that your brain wires you for that. Just like I was saying before, if you're stressed a lot, your brain's wired for that fear center, and that's going to be the dominant feature when things get a little dicey. Well, you through a practice, if you begin to practice making the choice for peace over a period of time, in a relatively short period of time, your brain will wire for that. And when things get a little dicey, you'll find this dynamic state of calm available to you to help you move through the problem in a more graceful and a more effective way. You'll be pulling in on your higher brain function, on your creativity. One of the things that stress does, of course, is that it multiplies the problem beyond proportion, and it freaks us out, and we get kind of caught in that rumination. Anybody that's paced the floor at 3 o'clock in the morning knows what I'm talking about. And that when you get to, when you begin to practice and make this commitment to inner peace, what happens is your brain wires to circumvent that, so that what comes up for you is this dynamic state of calm. And instead of seeing a problem getting multiplied beyond proportion, you begin to see solutions. Your creative intelligence kicks in, and you solve the problem.
And you string a bunch of days like that together,
and pretty soon you're succeeding more in your life.
And you mentioned that the creative
relationships with other people, you're happier. And as we've been talking about, your chances for optimal health have gone way, way up.
And your creative intelligence literally pulls in, you were mentioning it pulls in higher consciousnesses that are out there, right?
Right. Well, it activates neurocircuits in you that that are interconnected and increase your intelligence and increase your capacity to respond instead of react, that give you the ability to calm down instead of becoming more and more anxious and fearful. It gives you all of that. And then, I think there is a wider intelligence, a kind of a magnetic presence to you when you're peaceful, that that draws opportunities to you that wouldn't be drawn to you when you're fearful and reactive.
So can you tell us
how to do it?
Yeah, I can. And that's what Mr. Cool is really why I wrote it, because I was reading all the research and all the books that were coming out on neuroplasticity. You know, many scientists consider neuroplasticity to be one of the most important discoveries in brain science in the last 100 years, and others even think it's the most important discovery in medicine in the last 100 years, and I agree with them. But everybody was writing about it, but nobody was telling you, so what do I do about it?
Question
you just asked.
But it's also answering that question of, like, we are supposedly only using a tenth or less of our brain. This is maybe moving us up to a much higher level, right?
Yeah. Metaphorically, that's a good way of putting it. All of our brain is always working all the time. The problem is that we're not maximizing its power when the primitive brain, that when our fear center is in charge, when we're mm-hmm. under stress, we're just not maximizing it. We're dampening down this higher order brain function that makes us intelligent, makes us emotionally positive, makes us healthier. And we're dampening all of that stuff down. So the one of the most important things you can do for your brain and for your life is to make this shift. And it's a simple psychological shift from fear to peace. Hmm. And so the tools that I've designed in the book, well, I didn't design them actually. They actually come out of research. They're pretty well proven. They help you to do that. And so what Mystic Cool is the four qualities that these monks were practicing when they were being tested by the neuroscientists. And when they, in doing that practice, they were seeing all this great brain function. And the first thing that they were practicing had to do with their attention. They were quietly engaged, fully present. And that's the first quality of Mystic Cool. And what that involves is dropping the incessant thinking that produces that pointless preoccupation we have with the past or those endless worries and ruminations about the future. And we just practice being present right here, right now, engaging whatever is before us with an open, alert mind and choosing to be calm. I can give you, there's a tool that I teach people that allow us to get to that. At that point of quiet in which we can be fully present. You want me to take you through it?
I sure do. I think it'd be great.
Okay. It's called the clear button. And remember I was saying that, you know, the primitive brain can't tell the difference between a real and present danger and the ones that psychological fear made up. And for psychological fear almost always starts with fearful thinking that turn into these reactive emotions that create this perception of threat that's not always there. So if you can collapse that thinking at the beginning, you can avoid a stress reaction and you can sustain really good brain chemistry. And here's how the clear button works. First of all, you imagine that there's a button in the center of the palm of your left hand.
Okay.
And with your right hand, with the index finger, you press the button in the middle. And you hold it down there. Now you imagine that you're becoming stressed. For the sake of this exercise right now, I'm going to ask you and your listeners to imagine that they're becoming stressed about something that's been bothering them. You know, the big stressors usually have to do with our health or with money or with a conflict in an important relationship. So imagine you're thinking a lot of fearful, worried, edgy thoughts about this issue, and you're beginning to notice that you're escalating into a stress reaction. And your stomach's churning, or, you know, your forehead's sweating, your hand's shaking, whatever. And then you remember you have this clear button. So you press it, you hold your button down, it sends a signal to your primitive brain, you stop thinking those worried thoughts, those fearful thoughts, and then you do what our grandparents told us to do, you count to three. And to distract the primitive brain, that fear center even more, you see each number as a color. So you press the button, you imagine the signal going to the primitive brain to quiet things down, you take a breath, you count one, and you see it as red. You take a second breath, you count two, and you see it as blue. You take a third breath, you count three, and you see it as green. And then you take a final breath, and as you exhale, you come into the present moment right here, right now, and you relax. And at the end of that, most of us won't be able to remember all of the fearful, stressful thoughts we were stringing together that were about to catapult us into a stress reaction. And what has happened neurologically, it switched control of our brain from the primitive brain, from that fear center that triggers fight or flight, to the prefrontal cortex where creativity and positive emotion and solutions to our problems can start to flow. Then you start seeing solutions instead of problems. It's in a wonderful shift, and it's really that simple.
That's really good. And so over time, you just press your finger and press your hand, right?
Yeah, your clear button. you just practice it. I challenge everybody to practice it tomorrow.
I think that's great.
As you practice it, one of the things you begin to notice is the people report is surprising, is how many fearful thoughts that they're pressing the button for. We think a lot of fearful thoughts, and it's the source of a lot of the stress that we experience. And we begin to realize, maybe I have a lot more control over this than I give myself credit for. Maybe if I just stop that kind of thinking, I could end the stress that I experience. And if, as people see that, the thing I say to them is, that's right. That's exactly right.
And
anybody wants to download this this exercise, I put it on my website for your listeners, and they can go in and get it at mysticcool.com and download it for free.
And well, I love that. And Mystic Cool is such a great name. And what can you tell people where you got that name?
Well, you know, we've been talking about stress and fear, and that's a pretty heated condition. And so the cool part of Mystic Cool is cooling down, cooling down from stress, cooling down from being fearful and anxious, and moving in the direction, in the opposite direction, which is becoming cool, calm, collected, peaceful. And as you do, what happens is, again, your brain switches control from the lower primitive brain to the higher brain. You start flowing with more creativity, more problem solving. Your positive emotions begin to kick in.
You're more inspired.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, you kind of have that experience of being at the top of your game. That's coming back. It's like the dots are connecting themselves. And that whole shift feels mystical. Hmm. And so I called it Mystic Cool.
Oh, I think that's just great. Mystic Cool. I think that's so wonderful. Now, you stayed in attitudinal healing for quite a while, but you're not there now. Where did you go?
I started a company. I left about 4 years ago, and I started a company called Pro Attitude that goes into organizations, corporations, and does this training, this Mystic Cool training to help employees make the shift. A lot of people are under an enormous amount of stress, particularly this particular time, you know, with everything happening with the economy, and to help people make that shift and to regain their capacity to perform at peak levels, and not only perform at peak levels, but to love their work again. One of the things that happens as you make this shift, a sense of flow begins to take over. Your brain begins to work in wonderful, mystical kinds of ways, and it's intrinsically rewarding. And so you spend a day working like that, you not only feel great about what you accomplished, but you feel good about the way you accomplished it. And going home at the end of the day, you feel good about life, you feel good about your work, you have the energy to give to your family. The person who comes through the door is the person everybody's hoping to see, not the person who's going to bury their head in a newspaper or be reactive. You get your life back. And so we go in and we provide this training, do follow-up with people, help them make that shift. And the ultimate goal is to help the organization make that shift, too, to move from a attitudinal climate of fear and stress to an attitudinal climate of peace and higher performance and loving work. And that's what I'm involved in now.
And you mentioned, it's very exciting, actually, because you mentioned the economic frustrations that are going on out there, and you know, and what did you say, in this economy, and there's so much marketed that's really fear driven from all kinds of media these days.
And, so true.
And what I'm hearing is that you're saying that we have the ability to find peace in the middle of that and thus be able to generate solutions beyond what we expect. Are you saying
absolutely
that?
We absolutely do.
And how about with kids?
Kids too, you know, they're really discovering a lot about how children learn and how their a young brain actually wraps itself around curriculum, and it has a lot to do with it. They're trying to create. They're teaching mindfulness in the Oakland School District, for example, out here. I think that we are on the verge of a a revolution of redefining what peace means. We're going to start thinking of peace in neurological terms, that it's higher brain function, it's less stress. You know, peace in its most basic sense is that you're not afraid of whatever's happening, and therefore you're larger than what's happening. That's what I saw when I was at the Center for Attitudinal Healing. I watched people master an attitude that took them from feeling overwhelmed by circumstances to a way of being with things that actually made them larger than circumstances.
Hmm.
And that's power. You know, that's personal power. That's the power of peace in your life.
Well, and
so
there's pro-attitude.
You can teach kids that.
And with pro, well, that's great. I'm really up for that. And for pro-attitude, are you getting a huge response from big businesses, from companies? And so
well, we're working with some great companies. And right now, the most of the companies are shut down. You know, they're not paying for any training. They're locking up their corporate jets. You know, there has been this retraction in this economy, and a lot of it has had to do with fear. Some of it's had to do with necessity, of course. But, the economy being what it is, it's affected business. But we're doing okay, and when things recover, there's no doubt in my mind that CEOs in the future, whether they learn it from me or somebody else, they're going to be learning a lot of neuroscience, that running a company and making that company sustain its competitive edge is going to have a lot to do with understanding how people's brains work and creating an environment in which people's brains can grow and in which they can grow in really positive ways and create an environment for people in which their brains can begin to tap their full potential. I think every human being has a blueprint for a special kind of genius, unique to them.
Mm-hmm.
But stress and fear takes it away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And so if companies want to do great things in the world in the future, CEOs are going to be practitioners of a lot of the stuff we've been talking about today.
And this is going to generate more stronger sort of independent thought as well, isn't it?
It's going to... Yes, it will.
Hmm.
It's an empowered human being. You know, a person who's not afraid, you know, my definition of peace is that you're not afraid of what's going on the outside. That's a pretty powerful human being.
Mm-hmm.
You can't push that person around too well.
How about with violent people or people in the street? There's so many street people. There's a lot of people in desperate need brain-wise, aren't there?
Yeah. Yes.
Are there any?
Well, from everybody from... You know, when you take a look at the statistics, you know, 8 out of 10 are at some level having a problem with stress. That covers a whole lot of people, from the very ordinary to people who are margin, who are living on the margins.
Mm-hmm.
It's all of us. You know, I think stress, what we call stress, is the same thing that the Buddhists call suffering or the Christians and Jews call the fall from grace. Or the Hindus call karma. It's the pain we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've taken a look at it at the level I have, and read some of the books on it, pretty soon you realize that this thing called stress is not just this generalized thing. It's the tip of an enormous amount of pain and suffering that human beings go through. And it's
because they're disempowered.
Much of it's unnecessary.
Yeah, it's because we're disempowered, don't you think?
Yes.
Conventionally, we're disempowered.
Well, we disempowered. Yes, it's true. We've been conditioned to be fearful. That's
mm-hmm.
I think that's a disempowerment. Is that our conditioning, our cultural conditioning, our conditioning, even within the churches we go to, we're conditioned to be afraid,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't serve us. It doesn't serve us to achieve the magnificent brain that we've been gifted with and to take it, apply our own unique heart and spirit to it and to do it, to contribute the thing we're here to contribute to the world. We're not, we are not conditioned properly for that.
Mm.
But we can take control of the situation ourselves individually and empower it for ourselves and make the changes for ourselves. I think the fundamental problem is that we don't value peace to the extent that it deserves. Peace is not just some feel-good, you know, nice, kind act to perform. It's a core condition to a positive attitude that will grow you a magnificent brain. Mm-hmm. And you got to value it more than peace. You got to value peace more than fear. And we don't. We still think, you know, in our kind of backwards way, that fear is what keeps us safe. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an oxymoron. How can fear keep you safe? But we believe that. Certainly our primitive brain is completely committed to that. Mm-hmm. And when it's in charge, peace doesn't stand a chance. Mm-hmm. But what my message to people is to change their understanding and their relationship with this word called peace. It's a power. It's mm-hmm. It's in our basic nature. It can't be destroyed inside of us. We can be talked out of it, but can't be destroyed, and it's there waiting for you. You just have to value it. You have to value it in a total way. Once you begin to, and the way that will begin to show up is that you're willing to listen to other people in a deeper way. You're willing to judge less. You're willing to forgive more. You're willing to choose to be calm in the middle of a traffic jam and not let your peace depend on how fast your car's going. You know,
I like
you
your thing about
it.
Choosing the longest line up in the grocery store.
Exactly.
And
that's
what
a practice.
You want to tell people about that? That's great.
Yeah, you know what that came out of? That, as I said, the way large majority of the tools and practices that I put in the book are proven. They're either proven through research or clinical experience, and that's one of them. That comes out of, you know, remember type A. A type A person is a very stressed person, fearful person, usually an executive who is predisposed to have a massive heart attack at some point because of their type A behavior. Mm-hmm. And so what was one of the things that they gave them in their therapy, usually after they've had a really terrible heart attack and they're going to these therapy sessions to learn how to be type B instead of type A, to learn how to be calmer instead mm-hmm. of so reactive. And one of the practices they had was when you drive home in the slow lane, because these people, you know, they want to bump everybody out of the way. Or when you go to the store or the post office, stand in the longest line and use the time to choose to be at peace. It's going to open your heart to everybody that's in there, to move slowly through the line and to be at peace, just to practice that. And if you understand that as you are doing that, you are creating a condition inside of your brain that's moving you to higher brain function, moving you to a place of power, you do it.
Hmm.
But the reason most people say, I'm not going to do that, is they don't believe that. But it's absolutely true.
So
and
if we just do
book,
the long lineup routine, our brain will begin to change?
Absolutely. Well, if you stand in line, in the longest line, and you mumble and grumble to yourself, and you become anxious and upset, no, it won't happen. But if you stand in the line, and you're really using that occasion to practice, the reason you've chosen to stand in that longest line is so you can practice being at peace. Mm-hmm. And you step into that. And even when a little bit of anxiety comes up, you work at shifting that, letting that go and coming back to being at peace. And pretty soon, it becomes more familiar to you. It becomes more natural to you. Mm-hmm. And when that begins to happen, yes, you will begin to rewire your brain and to expand neurocircuits that have the capacity to make you great, make your life great.
Great. Well, can you give us one more of these exercises?
Sure. Another simple one is answering what some people call the secret question. And the secret question is, what am I afraid of? You know, I've been saying throughout the hour that if you're stressed out, it's because you're in some form of fear. That some form of fear has to be present to kick you into a stress reaction. So if you're walking down the hallway going to a meeting and you're anxious about this meeting and you begin to know you have a stress reaction, you can ask yourself this question, what am I afraid of? And you don't ask it just once. You ask it over and over again. 5-6 times, and you let the answer come straight from your primitive brain, and believe me, the answer will be very raw. So, for example, the other day there was somebody I'm coaching who found a discoloration on her arm,
mm-hmm.
and she got it scared her. And so we went through the what am I afraid of, and, you know, it was complete catastrophe what her primitive brain was telling her, that we're going to die, we're going to be life-threatened. Or if you have a bill, you get a credit card bill that's bigger than you thought it would be, and it scares you, your primitive brain will kick in and start saying, you know, it's a catastrophe, we're going to be in the poorhouse, it's, you know. So as you ask this question, what am I afraid of, you let those answers come raw to you. You'll begin to notice that there's some element of catastrophe, of exaggeration to them. And when you look at them, you realize what Mark Twain said, is that, you know, my life has been a series of terrible calamities, some of which actually happened, means most of them don't happen. And they're not worth losing brain power over. And you can let them go. You can calm down. You can return to a few breaths, to let it drop, and you will be transferring control of your brain from that primitive fearful place to the higher brain. What am I afraid of? That's all you got to ask.
Well, it's funny. I went to a dentist today. I was having a bit of a calamity, but it was a real one. And went to the dentist. It was new to me, and I was scared. And I lay back in his chair and went into being at peace. And it really worked beautifully. So thank you for that.
Oh, well, congratulations to you. See?
Congratulations to you. So your book is Mystic Cool by Dawn Goey. And also, you're a coach, and you have another website, Pro Attitude. Do you want to talk about that before we sign off?
Yeah, sure. The Mystic Cool website has a lot of stuff on it for somebody reading my book. So I've designed it for that. There's the latest research. Every week there's something wonderful coming out in neuroscience, and it keeps reinforcing this message, you know, I've been talking about. And so they can get that information there. There's a companion CD and worksheets that they can download if they buy the book.
Great.
There's lots of stuff on the mysticcool.com website.
It's called Mystic Cool, M-Y-S-T-I-C. And cool.
And the proattitude.com website, which is for the corporate consulting, it has a lot of information, but it's the same kind of message, but it's geared toward business. It's geared toward the workplace.
Wonderful. That's really exciting. Now, do you also want to talk about your own coaching, and then we have to say goodbye?
Okay, yeah. The coaching that I do is... I think it's pretty inexpensive. I like to do it inexpensive. I like to help people with this stuff. And I do 30 to 45-minute sessions with people, usually take them through a series of six sessions. And by the end of the six sessions, they're pretty well grounded in what we've been talking about and able
to move
forward.
Do you take them for an MRI at the end of it?
I'm sorry, what?
I said, do you take them for an MRI at the end of it?
No, I wish I could. But they did this one study in a really stressed out workplace where they did the MRI at the beginning and they found a really stressed brain, and they did it at the end of these practices 8 weeks later, and they found a completely different brain in these people just in 8 weeks.
I think that's so exciting.
But that's very encouraging, don't you think?
Yeah, I love that proof. And I have to say goodbye or they'll hook us off stage.
All right.
But I've so much enjoyed it, and I'm certainly going to follow the instructions in Mystic Cool. I love this book. It really got me all excited.
Oh, well, thank you. And thank you for the time together.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Thank you, Don. And that was our de-stressing information for tonight. I really encourage you to look through that book, and I haven't checked the website but I'd like to, because this neuroscience is really something that's going to encourage all of our evolution in this time of change. My name is Veronica Entwistle, and I'm going to be on with Jackie Salvitti on ET Healing on Thursday night at 8 o'clock. Oops, I forgot. Radiance by Design, my call-in show, all about meditation and so on, is on just before Jackie's show at 7 o'clock on Thursday evening on BBS Radio. And we're going to be talking about listening and the power that is created when we actually listen to each other and all of that. And then next Tuesday, I have on Michael Drew. And he's a fellow who created a company called Promote a Book. He's a publisher, and he's a young entrepreneur, and he's going to be involved in a big consciousness and business seminar in Calgary, Alberta. So I think it's going to be quite an interesting discussion on. We already talked with Dawn Goey about de-stress and getting more conscious about working workers going into their own potential in work. And Michael's going to be talking about consciousness in business. So tune in next week at 8 o'clock on BBS Radio. Many blessings to all of you. If you'd like a session with me, it's Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com. Or write me a note. Tell me how you like tonight's show or who you would like to talk to. Or did you manage to find peace and de-stress? Many blessings to all of you. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you Thursday at 7 p.m. here on BBS.